It's a pleasure to be here at tonight's program, sponsored by the Center for the Jewish Future and Yeshiva University and REITs and all the different partners that come together to bring Torah to our community. And a little adjustment. And it's really a pleasure to be able to be here tonight. I know the hour's late. I know many people have a lot to do. I'm following a tremendous cast of incredible Torah scholars and inspiring people. I don't know if Dean Schechter is still on, but I want to wish her a Gemar Chasima Tova. It's so wonderful to see you. We've spent other Yomim Tovim together in other spaces, but it's always inspiring to hear the last few minutes of your incredible words, and to all of the speakers and all of the presenters over the course of the night. So we won't be that long, because I know everyone has a lot to do. People have food to cook, stuff to get ready for Yontif, piyutim to cut from davening. I know there's a lot going on. Everybody's very overwhelmed. I just had a meeting with my gabayim, and when I gave the chazanim the list of things that we're not going to say this year to make davening a little shorter, they asked if I would turn over the drasha so that they could go over it and decide which parts could be eliminated from what I'm going to say. So everybody's working together in a very special year to make Yontif and to make the experience inspirational and wonderful. And one of the ways we're able to do that is for so many of us to come together tonight and to learn Torah in anticipation of Shabbos Shuva and of Yom Kippur. So I want to begin tonight really by reflecting on a tension that exists within the entire experience of Yom Kippurim in the way that it was, in the experience as it was originally intended to be. In the days of the Beis HaMikdash, where the experience of Yom HaKippurim was not just about chazanim and rabbis and appeal cards and all the different elements that we know comprise the Yom Kippur contemporary experience, but really what it was about was connecting to the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. To Yom HaKippurim as a journey of the Kohen Gadol, someone who carried the entire Jewish people on his shoulders, who embodied Am Yisrael, who represented us, and really stood for us as he entered into the inner sanctum of the Kodesh HaKadoshim to appeal for the Jewish people, for our health, for our prosperity, for our forgiveness, for our atonement. And this regal experience was transformative for everyone connected to it, for the Kohen Gadol himself, for the Jewish people who were a part of it. And the ripple effects were cosmic, and they impacted not only Am Yisrael and the future of the Jewish people, but it had great impact on the world at large. And all of these sentiments are echoed throughout the liturgy, throughout the davening that we're going to connect to over the next number of days, wherever we find ourselves, this experience of Avodas Yom HaKippur. And I think that when we connect to the notion of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, we almost do so with a certain sense of hesitation and restraint and deference to the magnitude and the intensity of the sanctity with which we are really relating to. We think about Yom HaKippurim, if you're with me with the source sheets. If not, we'll be together without the source sheets also. It's okay. I tell my, we have source sheets Shalmata and source sheets Shalmala. It's all good. One of the advantages of the pandemic is a lot less Shemus. All the Rabbanim and all the Torah scholars and all the Torah teachers have killed a lot fewer trees in the teaching of Torah over the last number of months. Anyway, so the Torah tells us in opening of Parshas Achrimos, in source number one, of the incredible experience of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. Bizos, says the Torah in Pasuk Gimel, Yavo Aaron el HaKodesh. Aaron was able to come to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he came so representing the entire Jewish people, the Chiper Ba'ado Va'ad Beiso, and he's going to atone for himself and for his family and for the entire Jewish people. And the Torah tells us of the intricate, complex details relating to the service in the Mikdash that would take place on Yom HaKippurim. The burning of the Ketores, the various sprinklings of blood, everything had to be done with absolute precision, everything choreographed perfectly, every element, every piece coming together with its own unique dimension of symbolism and ritual expression of fundamental ideals, and the Jewish people just connected to it in such a spiritual and emotional way. And it really presents for us this depiction of this idealistic space, this idealistic moment, this idealistic individual, this Kohen Gadol walking in this idealistic time of Yom HaKippurim into that inner Kodesh HaKadoshim. And we know, the Rambam tells us in source number 2, Shivas Yamim, quoting the famous Mishnah in Yuma, Kodim L'Yom HaKippurim, Afrishin Kohen Gadol B'Meiso. There was so much preparation that took place. There was a sense of tremendous reverence for this process and for this experience. There was anticipation. There was even a stand-in, already a backup, ready to take the place of the Kohen Gadol if something went wrong. And the Gemara in Brachos tells us in source number 3, Amar Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, popularized in a contemporary song, Pam achas nichnasti la'achtir ketores lifnai v'lifnim. I once entered into that inner chamber of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'ra'isi achasriel ka'ashem tzvakos shu yosei v'alkisei ram v'nisa. And this Kohen Gadol, this Yishmael ben Elisha, he actually saw some sort of angelic representation or manifestation of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. There was such a sense of heightened spiritual connection and enveloping sanctity that went along with this moment, with this experience. And it wasn't just for the Kohen Gadol, as the Rambam tells us in source number 4, and we're going to express this in the context of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, as we recite it in on Yom Kippur itself. Everybody who is standing in the Azara, who is merely in the presence of this experience and wasn't even identifying with it personally, just simply was in the aura of its impact, says the Ram Kishem, Shomim is Hashem HaMefurash. When they heard the name of God, Yotzim Mipi Kohen Gadol B'Kedusha V'Tara, it was in holiness and purity. Korim U'Mishtachavim, everyone would bow, everyone would kneel themselves. V'Noflim Al Pineim V'Omrim Baruch Shem Kivon Machusoli Olam V'Ed Shenemar Ki Shem Hashem Ekra, when the name of Hashem is called, Hovu Godel Elokeinu. And this narrative of Yom HaKippurim, which is often the one that is depicted artistically when kids come home from school, it's the one that seems to project itself most dominantly in the context of our tefillos. And it's what we sort of imagine when we think about what it must have been like for the Kohen Gadol to enter that Kodesh HaKadoshim, what Yom HaKippurim must have been like. Just such an elevated, and it seeps into us. How often, you know, do we have those moments? Is it okay to do this? Is it okay to do that? Oh, it's Yom Kippur. It's Yom Kippur. Can you wear makeup? Can you not? It's Yontif. It's Yom Kippur. It's Yom Kippur. You know, it's there's a certain saturated sense of connectivity to the divine that just takes over in the realm of Yom HaKippur. However, and this is a big however, when you begin to follow the narrative of the unfolding drama of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippur, you encounter another chapter in this entire experience, and one that is so dissonant with the nature and the tone of that which we've been talking about up until now. The Gemara tells us in source number 5, and we know this from the Psukim, that after the Kohen Gadol was brought the 2 Seirim, and there was a lottery, and the Kohen Gadol got to choose, got to pick. He had exercised Bechira, free will. And he chose, this Seir is going to go Lashem, it's going to be a carbon. And this Seir is going to go Lazazel, it's going to go to the Midbar. And the Seir that goes to the Midbar is accompanied by an individual whose identity is designated with significance but shrouded in anonymity. The Ish Iti, this enigmatic personality that is central, core, critical to the experience of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, but doesn't seem to have the same sense of prominence and stature that we encounter when we think about the Kohen Gadol. I don't know that anybody could name any of the Ish Itis in all of Jewish history. Who were they and what became of them? And what happens with the Ish Iti? The Ish Iti is the one that takes the Seir, Mishtaleach, takes this animal that we're going to bring into the desert, throw off a cliff, end its life in such a violent and horrific fashion. And that whole the whole notion that this divergence takes place between the sacrifices that make their way to the Mikdash, where they are engaged with such care and love and attention to halachic detail, and the Seir HaMishtaleach, the Seir that's sent into the desert simply to tumble down the cliff. It's such an anomaly in Jewish life. We never do this. We never, you know, the activists are after kaparis. If they knew about the Seir LaZazel, what would be? Like we never do this, to push an animal down a cliff, to send it out to pasture into the desert, to its demise, who's ever heard of such a thing? It's so not Yom Kippur, Dick. Not only that, but the Ish Iti himself, in such stark contrast to the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol represents absolute idealism and the apex of spiritual stature. The Ish Iti, the Gemara tells us, with all sorts of limudim. Iti, even if he's Tomei. Iti, even if there has to be some Chol Shabbos. Iti, even if he has to eat in order to make this happen. The Ish Iti is defined not by the lofty goals and aspirations of the Kohen Gadol. The Ish Iti is invited to essentially, if necessary, succumb to some of the greatest challenges and, dare I say, violations of the sanctity of Yom HaKippur. And so therefore, there's this tension, there's this dissonance that exists between, on one hand, the experience of the Kohen Gadol, which is so transcendent and so, so big, so holy, and the experience of the Seir HaMishtaleach, which seems to be so mundane and so grounded and so almost representing the most humanistic and just lacks any sense of regal, identity that we associate with Yom HaKippur. And in fact, indeed, there's a lot of discussion as to whether or not this Seir HaMishtaleach, what its status even is, what exactly the Seir HaMishtaleach is. Is it a karbon? Is it just a unique karbon? There's discussion in the Achronim that maybe the tumbling of this Seir HaMishtaleach is actually a form of shechita on this karbon. Could you even, are all of the halachos that relate to animals after they're slaughtered applicable to the Seir HaMishtaleach? What does it represent? It's such an anomaly in Jewish life. But not only is this polarity so striking in the drama of Avodas Yom HaKippurim, but what's even more fascinating is the interdependence between them that emerges in the context of the unfolding sequence of events that are necessary to accomplish the kapara of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. As the Gemara tells us, Amar lo l'kohen gadol higia seir lamidbar, says Rashi. They used to tell the Kohen Gadol, you should know the seir, it reached the desert, it got there. Why is that important, says Rashi? She'eino rishai lehaschil ba'avoda acheres. He's not allowed to start. He's not allowed to begin. He's not allowed to move forward in the next stage of his avoda for Yom HaKippurim. Ad she'agia seir lemidbar. Until the seir reaches the midbar. She'nemar, shilachas ha-seir ba-midbar ve'achar kach. It says that you should send the seir to the midbar, and subsequent to that, you should proceed with all of the different stages of Avodas Yom HaKippurim. So not only do we encounter this dissonance in the just general narrative of the day, but we also encounter a certain sense of connection, a relationship between the two. These are not two parallel tracks running alongside each other with alternate symbolism. These are interconnected, interrelated, in creating some sort of singular experience that is intended to project the core identity and impact of Yom HaKippur. So what's going on? How do we understand this? So this leads us to a general reflection about tshuva itself. What indeed is tshuva? What indeed happens when a person repents. We're all involved. You'll excuse me. I made the bracha on the last Zoom, so I was very religious there. Now, what is the tshuva? What do we mean when we talk about tshuva? So the Rav in his Ala Tshuva, he quotes the famous Gemara in Yuma, Amar Reish Lakish, Kedola Atshuva Shezidonos Nasalo Kishkagos. We know that one of the great aspects of tshuva, it has the capacity to transform that which has been done inadvertently or without intent from being something that is falling short of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations, from an aveira, even to a zechuyos, even to a merit. So literally, you take the things that you did wrong, and they themselves, it's not just turning over a new leaf. It's not that we start fresh. That's not tshuva. Tshuva means we redefine the whole narrative of our life, the whole story of our life. Everything that we did takes on a new dimension of significance and purpose. Everything that we did is recast in a new light and becomes not no longer a source of tension and a source of consternation, but rather is actually a source of tremendous success and tremendous achievement. And this is how it works. So your zidonos nasa kishkagos, your shkagos nasa kischuyos. This is why we have a minig during Aseres Yemei Tshuva to eat Pas Yisrael, right? We eat a higher standard of kashrus for bread, right? So my minig is to eat as much Pas Yisrael during Aseres Yemei Tshuva as bread regular that I ate during the year. And you elevate the whole thing, it all becomes nasa kischuyos. Everything becomes amazing. Everything becomes incredible. So says the Rav, what does that mean? How does your zidonos, nasa kischuyos, how does that work? So he explains that in the consciousness of man and in the experience of man, we don't view our actions in our moments as solitary points on a linear progression of time. We don't view our life experiences as simply a sequence of encounters and things that happen to us. Rather, our life lives in a much more holistic framework. And things that we do can be actions that are effectuated at one moment, whose meaning and purpose and impact actually culminate fully in another moment. And so therefore, when we do something wrong, it could be that its immediate consequences are detrimental to ourselves spiritually, to those around us, to the world at large. However, when those actions culminate with an experience of introspection and transformation and growth, then the very experiences themselves become elevated to moments and points of actual positivity and accomplishment and achievement and growth. Growth is not entirely living in the ideal from beginning to end. Growth and spiritual achievement is not beginning, gracious Bar Elohim, everything's perfect with me, and my life ends with everything being perfect. And everything in the middle was just an ideal expression of the values and ideals of Torah and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not called spiritual achievement. Spiritual achievement is the recognition that we are human, that we are fallible, that things go wrong, that we make mistakes, that we fall short of expectations. And that even those moments can be elevated for a larger and greater purpose. And when we do so, we recast the entire experience in a more elevated manner, and the whole thing becomes a much broader reality. It's not that we turn over a new leaf. It's what was wrong itself becomes right. And this notion is expressed in so many aspects of our tradition. We'll just focus on a couple. We know that the Medrash tells us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan in source number 9, Kol mi shenemar bohaya, every individual that is described in the Tanakh with the word haya, hu tchilaso v'hu sofo, that there is a tzidkus that exists from their beginning to their end. And then the Medrash asks, Echad haya Avram? Yet Avram himself is described with the word haya. Why is this surprising? Because the Rambam tells us in Hilchas Avodas Kochavim The Rambam tells us that Avram Avinu's background was not so remarkable, that his entire origin story is one of idolatry. His home was one that actually manufactured and sold idols. That's how you know he'd be the first Jew. He figured out how to make money off the idols. But his Avram Avinu is him, he himself, is what he grew up in. And in fact, the Rambam uses the term, v'hu oved imahem, that he too was part of this culture of idol worship. He too was swept up in the culture and the messaging of the day until he underwent his own introspective journey and discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his own way. And that resulted in his own transformation and in his own achievements in bringing the world of ethical monotheism to the broader world. So the Ol Yaakov writes in source number 11, how could you describe Avram Avinu with the word Haya, Tzadiku mitchiloso v'ad sofo? He wasn't righteous his whole life. And he answers, you're right, he wasn't righteous his whole life. But his whole life was about leveraging those faults and those challenges in pursuit of elevating the world. He took those experiences and he spoke to people in the world. He understood them. He spoke their language. He could appreciate where they were coming from. He understood their challenges, their issues, what they were struggling with. He was part of it. And his background, his foundation of idolatry became the catalyst for his achievement. The story doesn't end at chapter 1 of Hilchos Avodos Kochavim. The story ends many chapters later, when all of those experiences and mistakes became a foundation of such impact. Rav Huttner says in a very famous letter, he describes that he's writing to a Talmud, to a student, that he shouldn't view failure as unnatural to the growth process of a Ben Torah. That he should recognize that failure is not something we endure despite our growth. That failure is the foundation of our growth. And he famously interprets a very critical pasuk at the end of the first column. The pasuk says, Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam, that the tzadik falls 7 times and gets up. So many interpret that to mean that the tzadik tries and he falls and he tries and he falls and he tries and he falls. And even though he tries and he falls so many times, despite all that, v'kam, he gets up. Says Rav Huttner, no. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam, you know why he gets up? Because he fell 7 times. Because he made himself vulnerable. Because he had the courage to walk at the edge of the cliff and to try things and to work hard and to embrace challenge and to confront the world. And because he did all of that, he fell. But because he fell, he found strengths within himself. Because he took it seriously and he was able to write the next chapter of that fall. One that recasts the fall in a much more idealistic context. And that's really what Avodas Yom HaKippurim is trying to teach us. That the state of ideals and the state of reality are not mutually exclusive. We don't have a day where we only bask in the glory of the divine and everything is perfect. We don't have a day like that. That's not real life. That's the next world. That's not this world. We have a day where we show that ideals, that the Kodesh HaKadoshim can redefine the Seir HaMishtaleach. We have a day where the two can coexist because they always coexist. We have a day where we show we can, in one avoda, two people, one, the Kohen Gadol, the other, this compromised Jew just trying to get the animal to the desert, where these two people are completely fused into one. And together with both of them, they are able to advance the destiny of the Jewish people. That it requires confrontation with our challenges and our difficulties and our failures and a reach for something greater, for something more, for something ideal, not to be defined by the Seir HaMishtaleach, but to ultimately return to that world of Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that's the world of Yom Kippur. The ability to coexist with faults and ideals, and to not live your life expecting an entirety of ideals, and to not live your life completely compromised by and paralyzed by our failures, but rather to recognize that all of these faults and all of these challenges can be elevated to a space of ideal. And I think there's no question that the year Tafshin Pei was a year of Kodesh Kedashim, and it was a year of Azazel. It was a year of Kohen Gadol, and it was a year of Ish Iti. There were moments where we felt like, wow, like, look what we can do. Look what we can do. Look what we can do personally. Look what we can do as a community. Look what we can do as a people, as a nation. Look how we could advance. It's amazing. Moments of Kodesh HaKadoshim. And in the very same context, there were so many moments where we felt like we were being forced into the desert and pushed down the cliff. And if Yom Kippur has the power to turn my sins into mitzvos, I have to tell you, COVID-19 gave me a bucket full of mitzvos that I have headed my way, because there was some real doozies of falling down, real ones of Sheva Yipol. But Yom Kippur shows us that that's part of the story. That's part of the narrative. We live with the tension of both. We live with the idealism of aspiration, and we live with the recognition that our humanity is part of what makes those achievements so special and so real and so significant. God doesn't want angels. God didn't put us here to be angels. On Yom Kippur, we're human beings that impersonate angels. We're not angels. We pretend to be angels. Because you know what? Deep within inside each of us, there is an angel. There is an angelic striving for a real sense of ideals. And I want to conclude with the Gemara in Yuma. Gemara in Yuma says so beautifully that after Yom Kippur's over, there's actually an encounter that takes place. The Gemara says, Matzo Bashuk LeKohen Gadol, that the Ish Iti finds the Kohen Gadol where? At Century 21. Not at Century 21 anymore, but wherever they go to shop, right? For the big day kahuna. They find each other in the shuk, in the marketplace. And what happens? Ish Iti says to him, I just want you to know, Asini Shluchusech. I just want you to know, you didn't see me after Yom Kippur. You should know. I know they told you. I know there was a sin. Just know, I did it. I did what I was supposed to do. I concretized and I took the sins of the Jewish people and I sent them to a space where you could move on and elevate that to something special, to something real. And I always felt that this Gemara is really, in certain ways, metaphorical. It's actually, it's hard to believe that this is a story that took place. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, I don't know. But it's actually a conversation that's happening within each and every one of us after Yom Kippur, where the Yom Kippur Yaakov, which was like rocking, Nila, davening, singing, passion, Kedusha, that Yaakov is now meeting up with shopping Yaakov, like the real Yaakov, the non-Yom Kippur Yaakov, the Yaakov that slips and falls all the time because he's trying his best and sometimes it's not good enough and he falls. And that Yaakov, after Yom Kippur, we have to have a conversation with each other. We can't just let these two pieces of ourselves go off in different directions. We have to bring them together. And we have to say to ourselves, hey, Asisi Shluchasech, there's a human real part to you and there's an idealistic part to you. Let's take that into the coming year. Let's take that into our reality. Let's move forward with the recognition that there is a piece of us that really wants to be great. And there's a piece of us that finds it really, really hard. And they're not contradictory. They're what Yom Kippur is all about. It's about recognizing that all of the challenges we face and the failures that we ultimately do, that all of that can be elevated to a life of sanctity, to a life of Yom Kippur. And that's why at the end of every Yom Kippur, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us a fresh start, a chance to see and redeem what we did wrong, and to be able to move forward with something better. I think that, you know, we're still in it. We're still in this. And we've heard so much chizuk and so much feedback about what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, how to be better, how to use this time and this experience to elevate ourselves. Some of it we've listened to. Some of it we've ignored. Some of it was too hard. Some of it was just a bunch of rabbis talking over Zoom without, you know, like, you know, it's like you look at my house, you think the whole house looks like this with svarim and meat and wood and this and that. Yeah, everybody's in chaos. Everybody's struggling. Everybody's having a hard time. Yom Kippur's a chance for us to recognize that the ideal space and the real space, it could come together. We could elevate the real to reach the ideal. We're not supposed to be perfect. We're supposed to always be moving towards perfection. And sometimes we do that on the edge of a cliff. We have to have the courage to keep going and to keep growing and to keep striving. Be'ezus Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu will give us the brachos that we daven for and we strive for over the course of this Yom Kippur. Bless the Jewish people with health, with prosperity, with shalom, with peace, with growth, with a sense of menuchas hanefesh, so that we could all move forward in our own lives, in building our own experiences of growth and being able to become greater Ovdei Hashem. I want to thank all of the speakers who are with us tonight. All of the shiurim will be posted on yutorah.org. You can enjoy any of them afterwards if you would like. And we look forward to continuing to learn Torah together. And we wish everyone a gemar chasima.